Hi everyone, thanks again for joining us here at Runners Connect, where we're bringing on expert coaches, runners, and elite athletes to help teach you to train better, smarter, and to get results from your training. Today we're going to discuss why it's important that you include strength training, warm-ups, and other ancillary work into your training schedule as a runner. In this interview, we're going to pick the brain of expert running coach and the man behind the scenes at strengthrunning.com, Jason Fitzgerald. Jason has helped countless runners successfully incorporate strength training into their training schedule to become healthier, faster, and more consistent runner, and he's on our show today to teach you everything he knows. Jason's going to start by telling us how to pay attention to the little things. Jason will share how he's a successful runner in college, but after developing a severe case of IT band syndrome after his marathon debut, he realized he needed something in this training needed to change, and adding that was strength work. He's also going to teach you how to add strength work on a tight schedule. Many runners don't have 30 to 45 minutes to fit into their running schedule to go to the gym and to blast out a big core workout or do some ancillary exercises in the gym. So Jason's going to teach you how you can do it in 10 to 20 minutes a day, get results, and make sure that you're staying healthy, injury-free, and becoming a better athlete. In this interview, we're also going to talk about the value of strength routines like CrossFit and P90X. We're going to talk about where they fit in training, and how you should incorporate them if you're interested in continuing to do these types of routines and also have running goals. Finally, we're going to talk about strength work and adaptations to minimalist running and whether you should be training with lightweights or heavyweights. We cover all that and more in our great interview with Jason. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. Hi, Jason. Welcome to Runners Connect. I appreciate you having us on, or allowing us to interview today. It's a real pleasure to bring on an expert guest like yourself.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So what we want to learn from you today is, you know, we want to learn a lot about strength work, how you, runners can use strength work to stay injury-free, how they can use strength work to improve their performance, to run more efficiently, and to train better. So to get started, I want to let our audience know a little bit about you. So let's start with your background in running. How did you get started? What have been some of your biggest accomplishments? And going from there, you know, how did you become such a big proponent of ancillary work and kind of start working towards that as a primary mechanism?
Sure. So my getting started with running story is actually pretty funny.
Good. We like funny stories.
I absolutely hated running when I was in middle school. And we had the track and field week. I did all of the field exercise, the field events. So you can picture me like as a 110-pound eighth grader trying to throw a shot put so that I could avoid the mile run. So, you know, fast forward to freshman year in high school, and I wanted to do a fall sport. And I was leaning towards golf because I liked the driving range and I enjoyed mini golf. And it was actually my mom who suggested I try cross country, and I had never heard of it before. And she said it was like track. So I thought, oh, great, I can triple jump and I can high jump, which were the only two events that I actually really liked. So I showed up to cross country practice. You know, I don't remember what shoes I was wearing. They certainly weren't running shoes. And I found out that all we did was run every single day. So, you know, it was a good thing that the team was really great. The coaches were you know, really good at what they did. So I kind of just stuck with it. And, you know, my love for running kind of blossomed almost immediately. You know, I think I started to see progress and I kind of got addicted to that, you know, how fast can I get feeling. So, I ditched basketball altogether. You know, everyone kept growing and, you know, I'm still 5'7". you know, I ran cross country, indoor and outdoor track for all 4 years of high school. And then I ran for Connecticut College. And I did the same thing there. I ran all three seasons for all 4 years. and then after college, you know, I started getting into some of the longer races. You know, you tend to do more road races after college. So I tried, you know, I tried the 10-mile distance, which I really like, and a half marathon, and I eventually ran the 2008 New York City Marathon.
Okay.
You know, I did okay for me. I think I ran 2:44, but afterward, I had a really bad IT band injury, and I was out for 6 months.
Wow.
Couldn't get healthy. I saw four physical therapists, and, you know, I was just doing a ton of research online, trying to figure out what caused my injury, how do I get better, you know, and I just really wanted to run again. So it took 6 months for me to finally get healthy. And that was sort of the catalyst for sort of designing better training and more holistic, well-rounded training. I think one of my problems before was I wasn't paying attention to all the little things that help keep you healthy in the long term. And so, you know, that was one of the big reasons why I started strengthrunning.com, you know, my website where, you know, I do some online coaching and, you know, it's a blog that helps other runners. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of doing those little things. And a big part of that is strength work. And, you know, not necessarily weights in the gym. It also has to do with body weight exercises and flexibility and mobility drills. And I think, you know, when you include those in your training, you become a much better athlete. And, you know, you have to admit that running is a very one-dimensional activity. You're moving in one plane of motion.
Right.
You're just going straight ahead as hard as you can go. So when you're, you know, I think moving in different planes of motion and you're working muscles that you don't really use when you're running, you become more well-balanced. You know, you target those muscles that don't get used. And, you know, I think it makes you a lot more resistant to injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely agree with you there. And especially I think their runners kind of tend to come from two different worlds. There's kind of the first where they probably weren't good at anything else but running, you know, through whether they started young, like through high school. So, you know, running was kind of their sport of choice. I think Chris Derrick had a good interview after he graduated college about how he was kind of a bad athlete in high school, in which I think obviously strength work can be a huge, make a huge difference for those types of people. And then there's probably the other ones that maybe took up running later in life, probably because they were unfit or went through years of really not doing anything. So I can imagine doing something outside of, you know, a singular plane of motion and kind of getting into different planes would really, really help.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I knew a lot of guys in college who had, you know, essentially no background in running. And, you know, they were soccer players and basketball players. And, you know, they came out for the track team in college. And all of a sudden, you know, they were able to run a 4:30 mile with, you know, 2 months of training. And, you know, that's almost unheard of. But, you know, these people have, you know, huge aerobic bases from the other sports. And, you know, they trained all through college without any injuries. They were never, you know, they had those little aches and pains that a lot of runners who have been at it for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years typically have. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that all those stop and go sports where you're moving laterally, you know, you're moving in different planes of motion and all that kind of stuff, I think is really important. And when you see runners or when you see athletes coming over to running, you know, they tend to be a lot more resilient. And it's kind of refreshing to see. And, you know, they don't have the base that, you know, someone who's been running for a while does. It's great to have all those different, you know, types of runners on a team because I think you can really learn from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, now that we've probably got a pretty good idea of, you know, why strength training is important. I mean, there are definitely probably some other things that we'll get into. But how much, I guess, of your current training does strength or ancillary kind of the little things make up? You know, would you say it's, you know, 30% of your training time is spent doing ancillary work versus running, or how do you break it up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I tend to keep things as simple as possible, and I try to break all those exercises down into routines. So, you know, there might be a routine that's more focused on flexibility and another one's, you know, body weight exercises. And yet another one might be, you know, an actual gym workout where you're using barbells and things like that. So I'd say for total training time, you know, I typically run roughly 70 miles a week personally. And, you know, if I'm training for a marathon or a half marathon, you know, I'll definitely bump that up from there. So for me, that's, you know, a little over an hour a day of running time. Mm-hmm. And I'd say before every run, you know, I do a warm-up dynamic stretching routine that takes 8 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
And then afterward, you know, I'll probably spend 10 to 15 minutes doing some type of body weight strength or flexibility routine. So, you know, maybe it's 25% of my total training time. And, you know, now that I say that, it seems like a lot. You know, 25% of my time is not even spent running. You know, I think, you know, 10 minutes before and after is really all you need. You know, you can do a lot in 10 minutes. If you know the exercises, you know the order of the exercises, you just go through them and, you know, you can do 20 exercises in 10 minutes.
Right.
And
right.
Then head out the door and you're warmed up and you're loose and your heart's going and you've opened up all your capillaries and all that kind of stuff that really makes you ready to run and ready to perform well. So, you know, I think on some days, you know, I certainly don't do 20 to 30 minutes of ancillary work. I don't think you need to do that much every single day. Mm-hmm. I tend to be a little bit of a perfectionist in that it's been working for me for so long. And, you know, I haven't had a major injury, knock on wood, in over 3 years now.
Wow.
So, you know, I really feel it when I don't do that stuff. You know, when I tend to slack off. Last week I was on vacation with my family and, you know, I didn't have the space to do all those kind of leg swings and all that stuff. So, you know, I didn't do it. And after 5-6 days, I could feel I was tight and I felt inefficient and just clunky when I was out running. So if you have the time to spend 10 minutes before and after doing a warm up and a warm down routine, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably really great for our audience to hear, because I think so many people get intimidated by the thought of when you say we're going to add strength work or core work or something to their schedule, they just automatically assume like, oh, I got to go to the gym. I got to make time to go to the gym for 30 or 40 minutes a day. And I'm already on, you know, already doing all this other stuff. And so I think it probably should help people if they're not started, you know, not doing some type of strength training now, that it really doesn't need to be, you know, a trip to the gym for 30 to 60 minute type session.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I tell a lot of the runners that I coach that you don't need a gym membership. It's not really necessary for runners, especially distance runners. You know, if you're a sprinter, that's probably a different story. You
right, right.
That heavyweight type stuff. But you can do so much with bodyweight exercises. You know, I think they've come a long way from just sit-ups and push-ups, you know, from maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
I do go to the gym once a week. I'll be honest, I hate lifting weights. And 20 minutes in, I'm done. And I leave, because I like to do compound exercises, you know, like I'll do the bench press and some deadlifts and pull-ups, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm bored. So, and I do. I think, you know, if you're hitting the big major muscles and, you know, you're not doing bicep curls and that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
You know, you can get a lot out of it, and it doesn't need to be that time-consuming. And if you wanted to, you could do everything with just bodyweight exercises.
Right, right. So yeah, so you mentioned that you do maybe like 10 minutes before and 10 minutes after, somewhere in that range. If a runner only had to do, was only able to do one, either 10 minutes before, 10 minutes after, what do you think would be the most important, which one should they choose if they could only do one?
Yeah, really good question. I'd actually maybe flip this and just do 5 minutes on either end.
Okay.
And just pick some of the more important exercises to do beforehand, you know, even if you only did 3 minutes. You know, Jay Johnson, who has a website at coachjayjohnson.com, he has a great warm-up routine called the Lunge Matrix.
Yep.
And this is something that I do almost every day, and I recommend it, to almost anyone. Mm-hmm. It's just a series of lunges in different planes of motion, you know, forwards and diagonals and backwards, and you're using a twist on one of them. That takes about 2.5 minutes.
Right. Yeah. It's not a long routine.
Yeah. No, it's not long. And if once you get used to it and, you know, you're not getting sore doing that lunge matrix, because I think it is like 50 lunges if you do the whole thing straight out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe start with 20 and, you know, see how you feel after that.
Right.
But if you can do that 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes before your run, and then afterwards, you know, maybe focus on some stability-oriented core exercises and that stuff, not just abs, you know, it's other lower back and your hips and glutes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes afterward, you know, you'd be miles ahead of the average runner who doesn't do any of that stuff. And, you know, they come down with an overuse injury, you know, every couple months. You know,
right,
the injury
right.
rate is kind of abysmal right now. I think some people put it at like 70%, which is, it pains me.
Yeah, that's pretty high. And it's true. That's what I've seen too in that range, that at some point, if you're training for a marathon, you know, over 16 weeks, that's about the injury rate that most people go through.
Yep. Yeah.
So, so let's try to delve in a little bit to kind of like what your strength training schedule looks like. So what types of routines do you do on a weekly basis? You know, where do you vary them up? You know, do you focus on, you know, particular body parts each day? How many, you know, what's your emphasis, that kind of stuff?
Sure. So I do probably a combination of 4 or 5 routines plus a gym workout. And again, I'll be totally honest and say that I slack off on that gym workout almost every time. But,
okay. But so just to be clear, you're doing strength, some type of strength work roughly 4 to 5 times a week.
4 to 5 different routines. I'll do something maybe 5 or 6 days a week.
Okay, so some of the routines repeat themselves.
Yeah, some of the routines repeat themselves. Because, yep. I mean, I think they're really valuable, and some of them, you know, I do multiple times per week.
Right, okay.
So for a warm-up, you know, I typically do, you know, I kind of put together a warm-up routine that I call the standard warm-up. You know, it starts with, you know, a couple exercises where you're standing up, and then you get down on the floor and you do a few mobility drills. The lunge matrix from Jay Johnson is included in there.
Okay.
And then I end leg swings.
Okay.
You know, that usually takes me 7 or 8 minutes. And I do that almost every day before I go running.
Okay.
And, you know, I think before a long run or a workout, I might do a couple minutes of extra warm-up drills. So, you know, I'll do the lunge matrix. I'll also probably do the cannonball routine, which is another Jay Johnson routine.
Okay.
You can see he's heavily influenced my thinking on ancillary work. I think it's crucial. So that's really what I do for warm-ups. You know, I kind of just go back and forth. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to make it too complex. You don't need to do 20 minutes of this stuff.
Right.
Because it really works, and 8 to 10 minutes is probably all you need.
Okay.
And then for strength-oriented routines, I have a core routine that I do probably 2 or 3 times a week. This is something that we started doing in college. It doesn't really have a name, so, you know, I very cleverly started calling it the standard core routine. You know, it's 6 exercises. You know, some of the more common exercises, plank, side plank, bird dog. You're doing some supine leg lifts, and, you know, you do that 2 or 3 times for about a minute per exercise. So the whole thing takes anywhere from 15 to, you know, 20, 21 minutes.
Okay.
And that's probably the longest routine that I do. Yeah, I think it's a really good general core routine for runners. It hits all the major muscle groups that we use. You know, it works the glutes and the hips, which I think are really important for injury prevention. And, you know, again, it's the longest one that I do. So I'm not doing 25 minutes of core work after.
Right, you said it's about 6 exercises, so it probably takes in the range of 10 to 15 minutes, probably closer to 10.
Yeah, so I go through the 6 exercises, and I'll take like a minute rest, and I'll just go through them again.
Okay.
And then a couple other routines that I do real quick. Coach Johnson has another more flexibility-oriented routine called the Myrtle routine, and that kind of focuses on the hips and pelvic area. I do that maybe once or twice a week. I think that's really great, especially if you're pressed for time, because you know, you probably do that one in about 5 minutes. And when I was recovering from my IT band injury after the New York Marathon, what I took away from my time with all those physical therapists and some of the research that I was doing, I put together a lot of the exercises that I found were most successful at treating IT band syndrome.
Okay.
And I put that into you know, a string of exercises that I call the IT band rehab routine.
Okay.
And, you know, it really focuses on hip and glute strength. You know, you use a TheraBand for some of the exercises, so you get a little bit of resistance. If you don't have one, you know, you could not use it. That's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think after doing this for, I've been doing it now for over 3 years, even though, like, I don't have any IT band problems right now.
Right.
I still do it regularly because I think the hip weaknesses is such a big contributor to running injuries these days.
Right.
That it should be done, you know, even if you don't have, you know, IT band problems.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I agree.
In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have called it the IT band rehab routine. People who don't have IT band problems are like, well, why should I do this? But, you know, it is just another type of core strength workout where, you know, you're doing kind of a lateral shuffle with an IT band around your ankles.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing some bridge type workouts to work your glutes. And pistol squats is a more advanced body weight exercise that is thrown in there too. So I think all of them, you know, can really work together, all the routines together to make a more well-rounded athletic runner.
Right.
And, you know, the runners that I work with, their injury rates are super low. I have them do this stuff all the time. And, you know, a lot of them grumble a little bit because they have to wake up 5-10 minutes earlier to get everything in. But, you know, I think the results speak for themselves. They're really successful. And, you know, I haven't been hurt in 3 years. And, you know, I'm not the only one doing it. You know, a lot of this comes from other coaches, but it's something that I believe in very, very strongly.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think you kind of hit it on the head there when you said, you know, it's worth waking up 5-10 minutes earlier if you can stay healthy. Because there's nothing worse than being injured. You know, any runner that has been knows it's terrible. You feel terrible all day. So waking up 5 minutes early every day is totally worth, you know, months and months of injury-free running.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, any runner who's been injured just knows how depressing it is. And all you think about is, I wish I could go running. I would want to go running on a hot day and suffer through the heat. That's nothing compared to this.
Right. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So kind of moving on to that, or I guess in the same idea, or I guess a different idea, what's your take on programs like CrossFit or P90X, Insanity, those types of programs that you see on TV? And I ask because it's a question that we get all the time. I would probably say once a week at least, somebody asks about whether it's good to incorporate that type into their type of training into their schedule. You know, what are your takes on it?
Yeah, so most of these programs are circuit-based and you know, I've actually done a couple P90X workouts. I've done some CrossFit workouts. I'm not as familiar with Insanity, but my understanding of it from a couple friends who have tried it is that it's very similar to P90X.
Right, I think it's the same thing as P90X, just a different brand.
They slapped a new name on it and they're selling it over again. But, you know, I'll be upfront and say I'm not a huge CrossFit fan. I think, you know, the workout of the day that a lot of CrossFit people do, it's not individualized at all. You know, anyone who shows up to the gym that day to do the WOD workout of the day is doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And from what I hear from people, you know, who are doing it and from everything I've read about CrossFit is that there's no real purpose to these workouts except this really general kind of like, oh, we're getting fit. We're like, you know, we're torching fat, you know, we're getting in shape, we're getting strong, where, you know, they're kind of just random compound exercises mixed with some sprinting to, you know, help you lose weight. And, you know, you do get fit and you do get pretty strong doing these workouts. You know, I just don't see it as a goal oriented in terms of like running performance, you know, like certainly if your goal is to lose weight, CrossFit and P90X will help you.
Right.
But from a running perspective, it's really hard to fit that into a training program just because they're very high intensity. And, you know, they're going to leave you really sore. You know, just one little side example, one of the P90X DVDs that I went through was the core, you know. DVD.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done that one. Yep.
Yeah. And it's an hour long. And, you know, I do core stuff all the time. My wife actually calls me a core whore. Whenever she's coming in the living room, I'm doing some wacky, you know, exercise. But, you know, I tried this core exercise, this core hour-long routine or whatever you call it. And, you know, I could not do every exercise for all the reps. And for someone who, you know, I consider myself pretty advanced when it comes to these bodyweight exercises just because I do it all the time. And
right,
you don't need to be super strong. It's all relative to how, you know, how much you weigh and, you know, your own body weight. And I kind of am amazed at how folks who aren't in great shape can complete some of these workouts. So anyways, I digress. But these CrossFit workouts, really high intensity, you know, they look favorably upon people who can put themselves through a lot of suffering. And that's hard to integrate into a training plan. I did just write a marathon training program for someone who loved CrossFit. They were doing 2 workouts a week. They really wanted to keep it in. So, you know,
that must have been hard.
Yeah, it was hard. And, you know, I said, okay, we're going to keep it in. And I did the best that I could. And, you know, we did CrossFit on, you know, the 2 days of the week where he wasn't running.
Okay.
And, you know, we tried to do the running workout before the, you know, the fast workout before these workouts, because you leave these workouts, you know, they're very strength oriented, but they're also very metabolic. You know, they don't take a lot of rest. There's sprinting involved. And I told this runner, dial it down if you can. You know, I don't want you to go 110% on these lifting workouts and then have your your running workouts suffer.
Right.
If you do some of these CrossFit workouts, they're only like 13, 14 minutes, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's billed as 14 minutes of hell. You know,
right.
if you finish, you'll be vomiting everywhere. You know,
right.
They're crazy. So if you do that on Friday and then on Saturday you go for your long run and you're toast and your goal is to run a marathon, then I have a problem with CrossFit.
Right.
Because it's not conducive to you reaching your goal. I would rather have you get in the gym, lift for strength, and take enough rest that, you know, you're getting strength benefits, but you're also recovering enough and it's an appropriate workout for you.
Right.
So that when you get to your long run or your tempo run or whatever you're doing, you're ready to complete it and you're ready to hit the times that you need to reach your goal in the marathon. So I guess the bottom line is that if you're running for fitness and you're not super goal-oriented towards a race or a particular time,
mm-hmm.
then sure, they can be integrated into your overall training. That's fine.
Right.
You know, if you're serious about hitting a goal time, I'd be cautious about putting them in because I don't think they were designed for runners, especially for distance runners.
Yeah, no, that's great advice, and I appreciate you saying. If you don't mind, actually, if we can go a little bit into, did the person you write the training schedule, have they completed their marathon yet, or are they still in progress?
Yeah, no, actually, funny story. I just wrote an article about him today. He did take 16 minutes off of his marathon PR. He had a great race. He didn't actually tell me if he went through with all of the CrossFit workouts, but they were in the plan. He said he really enjoyed them, and he felt that he was getting stronger from them. So, you know, I think it worked for him and, you know, every individual is going to be different how fast you recover from those types of workouts. You know, maybe he was kind of sandbagging some of the really intense stuff
mm-hmm.
At the CrossFit gym that he goes to. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it all comes down to how hard you work at the CrossFit workouts or the P90X. So, you know, you can dial down the intensity and make it work for you.
Yeah.
Some of the P90X DVDs are, you know, they're also very like, isolated to different muscle groups. You know, there's like a bicep and, you know, back.
Right. Right. They're separating the days. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and they separate the days. So, you know, if you want to go through the entire P90X workout program, you really have to work out. You have to lift like every day.
Mm-hmm.
And most marathoners aren't going to work out in the gym every day.
Right.
They're going to be running most days, but you know, they should be in the gym maybe twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's probably a pretty typical gym schedule for a marathoner.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, I see the benefit in these types of workouts, and, you know, they can be used appropriately for runners, but I think it's a gray area.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you sharing your expertise on it and your experience with coaching somebody from it, because, like I said, again, it's definitely a question that we get a lot, and obviously you do as well, since you know, you had somebody that was diehard enough to continue to try to do it. So I think it's important for people to know the strengths and weaknesses of those types of routines so they can make the best decision about, you know, what their goal is. You know, if they really want to qualify for Boston and that's like their all they care about, then they, you know, we need to prioritize things. And if, you know, it's kind of like, oh, if I break 4 hours, great. If I don't, no biggie, then, yeah, CrossFit can be integrated. Kind of going along the same lines, you mentioned, you know, CrossFit and a lot of these routines being like very high intensity. So when you're incorporating higher intensity type training routines or something where you're going to go a little heavier, maybe you're doing some gym work or doing maybe some lower body exercises where you're doing a lot of lunges and somebody's getting a little sore, what theory do you prescribe to in terms of like hard? For me, I do like the hard days hard, easy days easy philosophy, where if we're doing, you know, we do our hardest strength training days on the hardest workout days, so that way we completely recover. Do you follow that theory, or how do you kind of work things in?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. You know, I think, you know, a big trap that most runners fall into is that their hard days aren't hard enough, and their easy days are nowhere near as easy as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're running too fast, and, you know, they on their easy day, and they're throwing in a you know, a fairly difficult strength routine on their easy day when they really should be recovering.
Right.
So, you know, what I tend to do is, you know, there's for some of my more advanced runners, you know, there's one day a week where they're not really doing much. It might be a 4 or 5 mile easy run with a couple strides at the end, some flexibility stuff, but that's really it. And, you know, for a runner running, you know, 50, 60 plus miles a week, you know, that is a real easy day.
Right.
And for lifting, you know, I try to schedule, You know, I don't think I do schedule a gym workout on a running workout day. I'll tend to do it on a more moderate day where they're not running as much, just because I found that it works from a scheduling perspective. You know, a lot of runners just, you know, they work a full-time job and have family commitments. And, you know, if they're running 7 miles, they might have time for a gym workout right after the run. Mm-hmm. But if they're doing 10 miles and, you know, in a track workouts tend to take longer, prepping and changing shoes and all that stuff. So, you know, they just don't have time to also go to the gym. Mm-hmm. So my philosophy is that, yes, easy days need to be super easy. So I would never give a gym workout on, you know, an easy run day or an off day that's reserved solely for recovery. Mm-hmm. But I think it works pretty well to do it on a moderate day, sort of a medium effort day where it's just some maintenance mileage and, you know, you throw in a gym workout. But, you know, I do subscribe to the, you know, lift heavy for runners. I think runners need to work on their strength in the gym. You know, I don't have runners doing 20, 30 reps of, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I think runners should be doing, you know, 4 to 8 reps of whatever exercise they're doing and focusing on strength. You know, I think runners, they work on endurance when they're out running. Mm-hmm. And when they're in the gym, they need to work on strength.
Right.
And there have been some studies that show, you know, runners who lift for strength and they lift very heavy weights, it improves their finishing kick at the end of a race, for example. So I think it can be really beneficial. And, you know, it's sort of a continuum. You know, there's doing 2 or 3, you know, 1 to 3 really reps with really heavy weight. Mm-hmm. You're really lifting for bulk. You're lifting for mass. And that's not something to do with distance running, obviously. And then there's that middle 4 to 8 rep range where, you know, if the weight is appropriate, and that'll be different for every person, you know, you're really gaining strength, but you're not really getting big. And it's also practically impossible for a distance runner to gain too much mass, because they're just metabolically, they're using way too much protein to rebuild their muscles from running gain any kind of significant mass. And then, you know, you could lift 10, 12, 15 plus reps for endurance. And, you know, I think that can have a place in sort of a general fitness program, but, you know, for a distance runner who's focused on performance, I think it's best to focus on the strength.
No, absolutely. I think El Garouche was, who's the world record holder in the mile, was famous for being able to squat a tremendous amount. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. I remember reading it a long time ago. But I was amazed that, you know, somebody of his size, and then obviously being such a distance powerhouse, you know, running under 13 minutes for 5K, was able to and did squat so much.
I don't doubt it at all. I mean, those guys were probably in the gym doing things that people of that size probably shouldn't be able to do it anyways.
Yeah, and you're a fan of Jay Johnson. I'm sure you've seen some of his videos where Sarah Vaughn is doing some, she's doing gym work. She doesn't do as much of it now, but she was, and he has a couple of videos of her squatting and doing some of that type of work. And it's impressive if you're familiar with gym weights, like what she's doing, considering when I was running, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty crazy what some of these elites can do. You know, Seb Coe was really into working out in the gym. Mm-hmm. He used to be able to do, you know, again, I don't remember the number, but, you know, squats with incredible amounts of weight. And, you know, it recruits all those muscle fibers. It gives you something that you really only get when you're sprinting all out at 100%, you know, you're getting that full, well, maybe not 100%, but you're recruiting as many of those muscle fibers as possible. And, you know, another thing that I do, and I have some of my runners do, is hill sprints. And I think Brad Hudson popularized this. I think it's a Renato Canova training technique. But, you know, you find a really steep hill and you sprint up it at 100% max all-out effort for 8 to 10 seconds. And then you take a full walking, you know, 1 to 2 minute recovery. You know, it's really only meant for, you know, it's basically running, extremely running specific lifting for your legs.
Right.
And, you know, the most specific way that you can do it.
Yeah.
I try to do a session of those once a week. And, you know, I can tell that, you know, you feel a burn just like you do when you're weightlifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great. I incorporated those towards the end of like my professional running career, and they definitely made a big difference. And I know Nate Jenkins uses them, you know, quite extensively. those types of things. I find the biggest issue that runners have with doing that type of work is really understanding that there needs to be a full recovery between them. A lot of times I'll assign them and I'll try to like bold it and underline it, you know, like full 2 to 3 minute recovery. And, you know, the first time they'll do it, they'll come back and be like, oh, I only took 45 seconds recovery because I felt recovered. And I'm like, no, there's no way you went, you know, from doing 10 seconds, 100% effort, you know, there's no way you went back to being a lactic, you know, like using the lactic system. So I think when people do that, and even if they're lifting heavy, I think it's a good note, you know, good to point out that they really need to listen to the rest that are in any suggested program that they're doing, if they get it from somebody knowledgeable like yourself, because it's important that they stay within the right energy systems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I think the issue that runners, distance runners in particular, run into when they do these types of workouts is that, you know, everything that they've done pretty much in their running program up until this kind of work has been an aerobic kind of runners, distance runners workout.
Right. They're breathing hard.
Yeah. You get into hill sprints, you get into, you know, lifting really heavy weights. Excuse me, that's a sprinter's workout. Mm-hmm. You know, sprinters are famous for, oh, my workout today was 4x200.
Right.
And all the distance runners laugh at them. But, you know, they took 10 minutes of just chatting in between and hanging out. But, you know, they're running those 200s as fast as they can.
Right.
So the effort level needs to really skyrocket on these things. But, you know, the recovery needs to go in the opposite direction. It needs to be full. It needs to be 100%. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it kind of goes back to the make your harder days harder and your easy days easier concept that is really important. You know, you need to, when something's supposed to be really hard, make it really hard. Mm-hmm. And when it's supposed to be easy, make it easy, because you're really cheating yourself if you don't.
Definitely. So moving into like maybe a different phase, you know, obviously minimalist running is a pretty popular thing nowadays. I guess first I should ask if you prescribe to that, you know, to the minimalist movement. And then if so, you know, what type of strength work do you recommend when people are transitioning to running barefoot or running in a more minimalist shoe?
Yeah, I call myself a cautious minimalist. I think you can use minimalism in a training program and get outstanding results. I think it's a spectrum where, you know, on one end you have people running in the Brooks Beast for 100% of their mileage and people on the other end who run barefoot all the time. I think that's more of kind of a lifestyle thing than, you know performance improvement and maximizing your how fast you can be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for most runners, I think they can transition to a more neutral trainer than what they're probably running in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, occasionally do some barefoot work or running in a much more minimalist shoe. But again, you have to be really cautious. You know, most runners have been running in, you know, stability or motion control shoes for years and years. So that transition needs to be very gradual. And, you know, that's, you know, I think common sense. And every runner kind of knows that. But, you know, they think gradual is like over a week. And it really should be over the course of like 4, 5, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But from a strengthening perspective, you know, running in a little bit less shoe and occasionally doing some barefoot or very minimalist shoe work, you know, it can help your running form. It can help strengthen your feet and your lower legs. I think it's very, very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the best models of how to incorporate minimalism into a training plan is sort of what I think college teams do just, you know, without even thinking about it, is you run in sort of a neutral cushioned runner for most of your mileage.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do a workout, you change into flats. Or if you're on the track, maybe you're in spikes. You race in spikes, or you're in cross country spikes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're finishing up just a maintenance run, you'll do 4, 6, 8 barefoot strides on, you know, the track infield or on a field nearby wherever you're finishing your run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just that, I think, is perfect. I think that's the perfect model of using a little bit of barefoot work to maximize its benefits while minimizing its potential pitfalls of, you know, getting hurt. So, you know, that's kind of impossible for most runners. You know, they can't end every single run at a synthetic turf field. I long for the college days. When that was just perfect. That was my dream. You know, a lot of runners don't have access to a track, so they can't do a very controlled workout in spikes or, mm-hmm. or flats. But, you know, in general, I think if you do maybe one or two runs a week in, you know, a more neutral shoe,
mm-hmm.
one really short run a week in a minimalist shoe, as long as you dial down the intensity, you go slow, you kind of, you know, you feel it out, you make sure you're not overextending yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you get into barefoot strides gradually, I think barefoot strides are one of the best things that runners can do, mm-hmm. if they have access to a place where, you know, they can do them either a field or
right.
a synthetic turf field that's close to their home. You know, you asked about strengthening work. I think barefoot strides are the perfect feet and lower leg strengthening that you can possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some more isolation type stuff that you can do. You know, you can scrunch up a towel with your toes. You can
yep.
pick up marbles and put them in a glass jar or a cup with your toes. Spend more time barefoot just in your house. There's all those kind of things, and I think those are beneficial, especially if, you know, you have a history of plantar fasciitis or something like that.
Right.
You know, that's probably part of a good treatment plan. But barefoot strides, I think, is where it's at in terms of, you know, maximizing the benefits of barefoot running.
Cool. Yeah, I agree with you 100% on all those points. That's pretty much how, you know, I assign things when people ask me what my opinion on it is. That's kind of how I say it. And I'm kind of funny because, or I feel funny about it because I'm one of those I trained in the Brooks, not the Beast, but the Adrenaline, which is their motion, kind of their motion control suit. And I had an orthotic. So, I mean, I might as well have been in the Beast. But, you know, what I say to people is whatever allows you to run healthy. And for me, you know, I was mostly healthy minus, you know, little niggles here and there. So it worked for me. But for others, that type of, you know, pronation control would probably, you know, kill them. But, you know, I prescribed very much the same thing you did. And obviously in college it was, in, you know, race, you know, do workouts, race with, you know, spikes and flats and then, you know, move to stride. So I think it's great for people to hear that from you and kind of confirm that that's a good way to approach the movement into doing some strengthening work for the feet and also minimalist work.
Just the whole cautious aspect to it is just so important, and finding what works for you too is such a crucial piece of the puzzle here.
Right.
A lot of runners look at it and, you know, they think the end goal is to be able to run in your five fingers for all of your runs.
Right.
And, you know, that's not the end goal. The end goal is to run a PR or maybe just to hit a certain mileage that you want to every week, whatever your goal is.
Right.
You know, if you want to be a barefoot runner, that's certainly a kind of a more lifestyle, I think, choice.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what you want to do, I'd say go ahead and do it. But, you know, if you want to get into races, you know, a little bit goes a long way.
Right.
When it comes to minimalism and barefoot work. You know, me personally, and when I was in college, I, you know, besides races, I never wore flats for workouts until my sophomore year, just
mm-hmm.
because I was, I was kind of scared to. I thought it was overkill, even though everyone told me I should.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got into it, I think it was one of the best things that I ever did.
Right.
But again, it took a couple years of gradually getting into it. And I think it's important for people to hear that the whole gradually getting into either barefoot or minimalist running, it's not a week's or month's issue. It really is kind of like a year's issue.
Yeah.
It kind of also goes beyond you know, what you're running in. You know, what are you wearing the other 20, or I should rather say 15 hours of the day?
Right.
That you're up and around. You know, are you wearing stilettos if you're a woman, or, you know, really clunky, you know, formal shoes if you're a guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wear like Sperry topsiders, you know, if I have to wear khakis, just because I find them super comfortable. You know, there's no heel lift. They're flexible. I
mm-hmm.
love them. You know, I wear sandals or flip-flops a lot, and I think the casual shoe side of things is really important too.
Right.
If you're always in a high heel dress shoe, and then you go into a five finger, you know, or a very minimalist shoe, you know, you're gonna have some problems. So
right.
I think you can attack the problem from multiple angles.
Definitely. So to finish things off with the last question, I ask this to everybody because I always find it interesting to hear different people's answers. And but if you could go back 5 or 10 years to your younger self, you know, what is the one thing that you would tell yourself in regards to your approach to training and racing, that you know you wish you would have known then, and that you wish, you know, hopefully you would take your advice when you're younger?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably have two. This is, you want one, but
that's okay. We can do two.
Maybe above all, I would say be patient. When I was younger, I always thought, okay, I ran 50 miles this week. I can run 55 miles next week. And the week after that, I can bump it up to 60 miles. And, you know, 2 months later, I'd be running 140 miles a week. It
right.
doesn't work like that. And I remember my sophomore year in college, I went from maybe 75, 80 miles a week over the summer. And, you know, within 2 weeks, I was running 90 miles a week. And boom, IT band syndrome, you know. So patience is something that's crucial to distance running. It's, you got to take a long-term perspective. You know, you need to really think in terms of years and not in terms of days and weeks. I feel like I've been saying that a lot. But it's just really important because, you know, the, you know, how you adapt to your training takes a little bit while longer than you think it will. So, you know, if you want to stay healthy and if you want to continue to improve, you know, take a long-term approach, be cyclical in your training, allow for enough recovery, which is something that, you know, I didn't necessarily do as much as I should have back in the day.
Right.
And, you know, maybe the other thing that is really important that that I didn't do up until, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago is pay attention to all those little things. And, you know, I think, you know, everyone kind of looks at me as like the strength training coach. And, you know, I think it's one of the topics that we talked a lot about tonight. And, you know, it is really important. And, you know, for injury prevention, for, you know, being healthy long term and for your gradual improvement as a runner, you know, you need to pay attention not only to strength training, but to flexibility, to sleep. You know, don't burn the candle at both ends. That's something that I used to do all the time. You know, in college, I wasn't always focused on running. And, you know, I paid the price sometimes. So do the little things and just be patient. And I think most runners will see a lot of success just with those two little lessons.
Great. I mean, I think that's fantastic. And I feel the same way. If somebody asked me that question, I would say, I don't know, maybe there's like 12 things I'd go back and tell myself. But no, I think that those are great responses. And I think people, if they really apply those to their training now and their outlook on and outlook and approach to running, they'll definitely improve and be more consistent. So I think those are great lessons to share.
Right. I always cringe when I hear someone say like, hey, just started running last week. You know, can I run a marathon in 4 months?
I'm
like,
right.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, you could, and maybe you'll come away unscathed, but, you know, I think 80% of the time that person is going to have some real problems. So
right.
Start with the 5K.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thanks Jason for joining us tonight on our show. I really appreciate it. We're going to throw some links up at the bottom of this episode for people that are listening on the podcast or watching the video. We'll have a link to Jason's site and to some of the information that he shared with you today so you can look at some of the exercises and routines and those types of things. So, Jason, I really want to appreciate you again coming on, taking the time to share your wisdom with everybody, and I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jason.